The Today's Homeowner Radio Podcast is brought to you by The Home Depot, how doers get more done.
Welcome to Today's Homeowner with Danny Lipford, your partner in home improvement. Everyone has questions about their home. We've got the answers, and we have a few laughs along the way. Informative, entertaining, and sometimes off the wall. Home improvement has never been this much fun.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Today's Homeowner Radio Show. So glad to be with you. So glad you're with us. Hope everything's going well around your home. And you know what? You're at the right place. For the most current, most practical, realistic home improvement information you're going to find anywhere. I am Danny Lipford, along with my buddy Joe Truini. And during this first hour of Today's Homeowner Radio, we're going to talk about backsplashes and what you can do to have your own backsplash. And you know what? It's not too late to have that before those holiday gatherings. Also, a few tips on how to keep warm this winter. We got to kind of keep those bills down and keep everybody from getting sick and nice and comfortable. We'll give you some tips on that. Also, rotten wood on a door frame. Very common. Right at the bottom, the frame has some wood rot. What do you do? Do you patch it or do you replace it? What's the best way to go? Well, I've done it hundreds of times. I'll tell you what has worked very, very well for me. We also have tons and tons of emails and great phone calls from our listeners all across the country, and a lot of people listening are anxious to hear this hour's simple solution. Joe, give us a little tease on what we can expect in a little bit.
All right, Danny, one of the most popular carpenter hand tools for professionals and do-it-yourselfers is the Speed Square, or the Rafter Square. It goes by a couple of different names. And most people only use it for one or two jobs. In this simple solution, I'll show five different ways to use your Speed Square.
All right, good. That sounds great. The very, very common tool. And whoever came up with that tool many, many years ago, I hope they made a lot of money.
I hope they put a patent on it.
That is an essential tool for anybody, whether you're a pro or just a do-it-yourselfer. It is something that'll come in handy every single time. We want to hear from you. We make it very easy. You can send us an email anytime. We got some great emails this week. You can send us one by simply going to todayshomeowner.com/ask or pick up the phone right now, 800-946-4420, our Today's Homeowner hotline. Appreciate all the wonderful calls we got this week. We're going to tackle as many of those questions as we possibly can. Now, Joe, I know you recently did a very timely article for our friends at Popular Mechanics.
That's right.
And, you know, one thing I truly love, and of course it's changed a lot over the years, Christmas lights. You know, there are so many kind of lights. When I was traveling recently out in Utah, I saw something I'd never seen before, some kind of very unique LED light that was kind of way up in the tree, and it kind of had like streamers.
Well,
and the lights would go up and down and up and down. I mean, it was, you could just sit there. I'm sitting here looking at a tree. Boy, am I ever boring. And but man, the lights were going and they could change colors. And, man, I could sit there for hours. But I understand you wrote an article recently for Popular Mechanics about holiday lights. So what are the things that you uncovered that our listeners would appreciate?
Well, so much has changed, right? In holiday lights, it used to only be one type of lights, incandescent bulbs. But there are several different types. So in this article, I looked at I think there are five basic categories of lights. There are string lights, icicle lights, net lights, pathway lights, and then spotlights. And most of them are LEDs, although you still can get incandescent. And then in the article, I just detailed on the different types of lights, where to install them, and how to install them. And then I had some tips that I had learned during the research. In fact, one that I'd never heard of before, but I checked it with two different experts, and they said this is absolutely true. You should never connect strings of lights together that are different light counts. In other words, you never connect like a 100 light string to a 50 light string. Hmm. If you're going to connect it to extend it, you have to connect a 100 light string to another 100 light string.
Wow.
If you mismatch the light counts, what happens is the string with the fewest bulbs will burn out prematurely.
How about that?
So, like, that's something I didn't know. So
I didn't know that either.
Cool. Huh. Yeah. And the other thing I learned is that there are companies, professional companies, that you can hire to come out and decorate your house for the holidays. Now, I don't know if this is a new phenomenon or something I never heard of. I'm not sure. I spoke with and interviewed a gentleman named Kirk Brown out in Pennsylvania. He owns a company called Dynamic Celebration Lighting, and it's a great service. They come out, they design the system. They measure your house. They custom cut all these light strings, and they decorate anything you want. Huh. And at the end of the holidays, they come and they take it all down. They store it away for you. And the next year, if you want them to come back, they come back and they put it back up.
You know, I've heard anything. I've heard of people hiring people to do a lot of things like that, but most of it's more like a interior kind of design that they may help with the tree, but then they're doing the fireplace mantle and putting a wreath here and there. But to do the whole thing, there's a thin line in there somewhere. We were Sharon, my wife and I were talking about, you know, she wanted to go ahead and this weekend start working on some of the Christmas decorations. And, you know, you start thinking about, well, when do you just pick up the phone and say, hey, come out here, give me some, you know, I'll pay you all day long to come out here and help me carry these 27 boxes into my house and that kind of thing. And after a while, sometimes you go, well, maybe I should be doing all of this on my own. It is part of the Christmas spirit. And then you go, nah, I'll get enough of that Christmas spirit. So we're good.
Well, it's like mowing your lawn or plowing your, or like I used to have a snowblower. And when the snowblower finally died, I thought, well, am I going to spend another, $1,500, or I'll just hire a guy. So I have a young guy who comes and just plow. So I used to mow the lawn, which I'm still doing, but at some point I could see just hiring someone to do it. So I think the same thing here.
Help on Christmas decorations is something that's on the son-in-law list, you know? I mean, that's on every son-in-law list.
That's right.
So all I got to do is make one phone call or a text.
Yeah, until he gets his own house.
Yeah, we'll see what happens there. So what else on the holiday lights, Joe?
We're talking about the LEDs and you're talking about the ones that are up in the trees. That's the great thing about LEDs. First of all, they don't burn hot, right? They stay relatively warm to the touch or cool. And they come in, most of them are programmable. So they have, not only they change colors, but they also will like blink or stay on, or they go through a pattern. And the ones you saw hanging from the tree, they kind of look like snow falling from the sky, sort of.
Yeah.
You know, and it just is continuous. And it's mesmerizing. There's a house I drive by that they have that, and it's hard not to stare at it. Like you said, they're staring at a tree. And people are putting wreaths on the front door, which is nothing new, but they've been lighting them. And the easy way to do that is with battery-powered mini lights. They sell these because, obviously, if you plug it in, how does that work? Mm-hmm. You know, opening and closing the door, dragging an extension cord or whatever. So they have these battery-powered mini lights that you can string on the wreaths, whether it's on your door or someplace else. And people are lighting not only just like along the roof lines, but they're lighting up trees or lighting pathways or putting spotlights here and there. Lighting up their special projections for garage doors. I don't know if you've seen this, Danny, where it's a projection and it's like a Christmas scene. Maybe it's like Santa and his reindeer going by the house. I mean, it's pretty pretty. I mean, how crazy do you want to get?
Oh, boy, yeah.
But you know, I mean, it's become a thing now where even they have TV shows where people go to neighborhoods and there's lines of cars like an hour long just to drive past that all these houses in the neighborhood. So it's, you know, it's getting into the spirit and it's lasting longer and longer. But I'm sure most homes that are going to decorate are probably decorated already.
Yeah. Well, I have one of those battery-powered LED wreaths on my front gate. Because, you know, it's a
good
pretty good distance away from any electrical supply. And like you say, you hate to have a cord hanging down that would swing, you know, here and there. So they're pretty amazing. And they have, you know, the dusted on type of sensor on it. So you basically just hang it on the fence, turn it on, walk away. And last year, the batteries lasted the entire season.
Oh, great.
Maybe I'll try to go for another season and see if that lasts.
And the one last tip is you never string any lights without first plugging them in.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to string them, whether it's on your Christmas tree or along your, imagine stringing it all along the gutter, your whole house, you plug it in, you find out the lights aren't working. Take them all down or the bulbs, you know, so always plug them in long before you install them.
And really be careful on those ladders, you know, whether you're trying to reach out a little bit to put the angel up on top of the tree or whether you're putting those lights out around the fascia board of your home. Really take it slow and easy. Sometimes we get in a big hurry during the holidays and that's the time that accidents happen. So be real careful. You don't want to spend any of your Christmas holidays with a broken leg or possibly worse.
Absolutely not. You
do have to be careful. But you hear about that every year. And so
sure.
I just want everybody to be careful and comfortable and really enjoy the holiday season. Well, we're just getting started here on today's Homeowner Radio. So glad you're with us. And I guarantee you, we're going to share with you some information that you'll be able to use at your home right away. Hey, coming up, we're going to be talking about backsplashes. Have you thought about a backsplash in your kitchen or your bathroom? Well, you need to stay tuned. You're listening to Today's Homeowner Radio. We'll be right back.
At the Home Depot, we have the tools for you to give the gift of a smarter home with savings on top brands, like the Google Hub, a command center for your smart devices that raises the IQ of your entire home, or the Nest Learning Thermostat that helps you conserve energy and save on your bill. And if you don't know what to get, gift cards are a smart gift no matter what they get. So this year, gift smarter with savings on tools to make your holiday magic. The Home Depot, how doers get more done.
Today's Homeowner is brought to you by The Home Depot, how doers get more done.
And welcome back to the Today's Homeowner Radio Show, heard coast to coast on some amazing stations like this one, KTNK AM 1410 and 103.7 FM in Lompoc, California. Special hello to everybody there listening. We want to hear from you. Pick up the phone right now and call us 1-800-946-4420 is the Today's Homeowner hotline. Or send us an email anytime you wish at todayshomeowner.com/ask. We're going to get right into the calls here on the hotline. Greg is on the line right now. Greg, you were talking about a backsplash here, and welcome to the show. Tell us all about it.
So I have a question about backsplash, or putting one up in our kitchen. We have a wall that is as upper cabinets, and then on the countertop, there's like a little back edge on it.
Mm-hmm.
That goes on the wall, but now we have like there's a like a like a wall that butts up against that wall that doesn't have upper cabinets, or it doesn't have that little piece on the bottom of the actual countertop. So we're wondering what to do with that area, because I feel like if I put any kind of tile there, it's going to look odd. But then if I don't put tile there, then it's just wall, and we want to be able to protect that. So I guess our question would be, how do we kind of match those two areas up?
Okay. Well, actually, I like this question because it is something that a lot of people ponder when they're, you know, faced with putting a cabinet like that. And essentially what you're saying is, how do you really finish off that edge to where it's, you know, looks good, that's not capped off by the cabinets or the backsplash of the countertop itself? Now, there's several different ways to go here, and it's all opinion-based. It really is. It's kind of what you like the most. What we've done most often in a case like this is not bring it out to the corner. You just butt it up to the corner, leave it on top of the countertop, run it across, and you're done, nice and clean. Now, of course, that does not give you your wall protection on the side, the left side, as I'm looking at your picture here. But that's what I would do. I would just put it straight on there and not worry about that. However, I have done it the other way, where you brought the tile even with, underneath the wall cabinet, brought it straight out to where it matches up with the edge of the countertop. And then that little edge that you have, which would be probably 16 inches vertically and about 12 inches across the top, couple ways you could do that. You can use the metal, a type of finish metal that's an angle that you put on the wall and you tile up to it. That gives it a nice little finished look. You actually can, that's available in a dark color so that it would match your stained cabinets. That would be one way. Another way, and a lot of this depends on the type of tile that you have, another way would be just to simply carefully grout that, maybe put some tape on the wall and grout it nice and clean to where the end of the tile has a finished look to it. That would be another way to do it. But the man that wrote the foremost tile book in the world is with us right now, Joe Truini. Joe, did you deal with this kind of particular trim out issue in your tile book? I'm not sure.
Yes. And Greg, I'm going to save you a lot of work by saying, leave it exactly the way it is. You have a couple options, as Danny mentioned. But when I put the backsplash in our kitchen, I just left it. What Greg's talking about, for people who are listening or aren't sure, is it's the perpendicular walls to the right and left of your kitchen counter. So the kitchen counter runs along the long wall, then you have these two walls coming out on the ends, and the backsplash doesn't continue. So that's one option. You could continue the backsplash, but only up to the point of the upper cabinet. Right? I wouldn't extend it all the way to the end of the countertop, the front edge of the countertop, because then I think it's sticking out too far. So I would just bring the backsplash, align it with the front edge of the upper cabinet, and then you just tile that area. So it kind of wraps around the corner. But, you know, what are you protecting the wall from? Usually on the end, on the side wall, there's not that much being splashed up against it or cooking grease or anything like that. So personally, I would leave it as it is. If you wanted to do something, I would just add the short section of a backsplash and then tile above it.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. The only follow-up I would have then on that little lip back that's attached to the countertop, do you tile all the way down to the countertop, or do you do something to kind of fill that area in?
No, as I said, I would, like, you have a granite backsplash.
It looks like post-form laminate, it looks like.
What is that cabinet? Oh, it's post-form laminate?
Yeah, it's a laminate top.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, that'll make it a little more difficult to extend that. What I was going to say is you just take that 4-inch high backsplash and extend it out, and then you just tile above it. Tiling right down to the... That's the only other option if you wanted to tile it, is to tile straight down to the countertop. But that doesn't look so great to me because it's going past the old, the existing backsplash, the post-form backsplash. Yeah.
Yeah, but that existing back part of the countertop, you could just butt the tile right on top of it. And after everything's finished and grouted and clean, you may want to come back with a thin, thin bead of caulk that matches the grout just to seal off that bottom edge right where it sits on top of that tile. But you're headed towards a great-looking backsplash. And you know what? Another thing you think about in this kind of situation, go ahead and do the whole backsplash, finish it up. And if you decide later that you just that's still bugging you on that one side, you know, you don't have to redo anything. You're starting right off of there to bring that out as you wish. So maybe get a little extra tile in case you decide to do that. But I don't think you'll ever want to do that because it's going to look fantastic.
All right. Well, it's some great advice.
Yeah, Greg, I have one other thing I was just thinking as Dana was talking. Do you have stainless steel appliances in your kitchen?
They're mostly black. There's one, our fridge is more of a stainless steel, but everything else is black.
Because I was going to say, the other option is to put a piece of stainless steel there. It'd be protective of the wall. You can butt it down to the countertop and up to the, you know, and then, you know, it would kind of match everything else. But if nothing else there is stainless steel, I guess that wouldn't really be an option either. So I would just leave it. If it was my kitchen, I would just leave it the way it is. And like Danny said, if somewhere in the future becomes an issue, then you can deal with it.
Okay. Well, it sounds great.
Well, right, Greg, thank you, Greg. One of the things we're doing during the month of December is giving away some brand new Today's Homeowner 25th Anniversary hats. They're cool hats. They're silver for our 25th year. We want to give you one. Our producer, Corey Wilson, will be in touch getting your mailing address, and we'll send you one so that you'll have that to wear around the holidays.
Sounds great.
Okay, well, you take care, and thanks so much for being a part of the show. And I'll remind you about that if you are one of our live callers on the show during December, you'll also receive one of these really cool hats. We'll have to put a picture of them up online there so that you can see exactly what they look like. Let's squeeze in an email right now. We'd love to get an email from you. All you have to do is just go to todayshomeowner.com/ask. That's what Jeffrey did from Fall River, Massachusetts. How do I fix a retaining wall that's sinking into the ground? I'll tell you, any kind of wall, I mean, first of all, retaining walls are very, very heavy. If failure has started and it's starting to sink, I've seen people talk about jacking these things up and using foam and different things like that. That usually results in quite a few additional cracks in the wall. I really don't know of any real successful way of raising up a retaining wall like that because of the weight. And the biggest problem is something has caused it to sink into the ground. And usually that is an insufficient foundation. And the only way you can really shore up that foundation is to remove the stones or the bricks or blocks, whatever you have on there, and put in a new foundation so that it'll support the wall. That's always a tricky one, Joe. Yes. When you see that sinking like that, it's a little too late to do much to repair it, in my opinion.
Yeah, and we don't know if this is concrete or stone or wood, but it doesn't much matter. And ordinarily, the questions we get on retaining walls is that they're bowing out. But if they're sinking down, yeah, somebody probably just set it right on the ground and built it without the proper foundation. They should have put down stone and really compacted it and make sure they have a really stable base. And the other thing is you want to make sure there's ventilation, that there's pipes coming out to drain water out, because you don't want water hydronic pressure against the back of it, because that would bow it out as well. Or all that water could erode the foundation, which might have happened here.
Hey, coming up, we're going to tell you about something that might be a perfect little last-minute Christmas gift for that person in your home that does a lot of work out in the shop. You know, sometimes the eyesight starts failing a little bit and you really appreciate a good bright light. We've got a special one we're going to tell you about when we come back right here on Today's Homeowner Radio. Don't go anywhere.
At the Home Depot, we have the tools for you to give the gift of a smarter home with savings on top brands like the Google Hub, a command center for your smart devices that raises the IQ of your entire home, or the Nest Learning Thermostat that helps you conserve energy and save on your bill. And if you don't know what to get, gift cards are a smart gift no matter what they get. So this year, gift smarter with savings on tools to make your holiday magic. The Home Depot, how doers get more done.
Today's Homeowner is brought to you by Duck Brand Weatherization Products.
And welcome back to the Today's Homeowner Radio Show, where it's time for our best new product segment brought to you by the Home Depot, how doers get more done. Now, if you work on projects that require detailed work with small little parts, you know the biggest challenge sometimes can be just seeing what you're working on. Never mind that our eyes are getting a little bit older, but Ryobi is helping us out here because they're introducing the OnePlus 18-volt LED magnifying clamp light. Now, with 500 lumens of LED light output and a 3.5-inch wide magnification lens, you can improve your view on any project. It sets up in nearly any workspace with a convenient clamping base to securely grip both rounded and flat surfaces. And the acrylic lens provides distortion-free 2.25 times magnifications with a 5 times spot magnification on a 16-inch flexible neck and rotating base, which allows you to put it wherever you need it. Plus, there are two brightness settings for the LED spaced evenly around the magnifying lens for full workspace illumination. Think about it. This is a perfect gift for someone that might be on your Christmas list because, you know, we talk about giving tools, and some people will say, well, man, why do you give tools to someone? That just, it makes them want to, you know, say they need to work more. Well, no, it makes your work a little easier. And that's exactly what this will do by illuminating that. So you can go online right now on homedepot.com or drop in your local Home Depot to check out Ryobi OnePlus 18-volt LED magnifying clamp light. I would not mind getting one of those myself because it always seems like, you know, you're propping up a light or something.
Right.
It just never seems.
No.
And I didn't put enough light in my workshop anyway, and so a little bit of supplement light like that will be good. So I hope my family's listening on that.
Well, first thing I thought when you're reading that is how great that would be to remove splinters.
Oh yeah, no doubt.
Because you have to hold the magnifying glass, uh-huh. And you have to hold the tweezers, and usually you have to like bend your finger or whatever to get.
And so, then you have to bite on a piece of leather like the old cowboys, you know, because of the pain, you know.
So that's the first thing I thought of.
Hey, let's get right to the Today's Homeowner Hotline. We'd love to hear from you. All you have to do is pick up the phone, 800-946-4420. Kathy's on the line right now from Oregon. Kathy, welcome to the show, and tell us what's going on around your house there.
Yes, I live in a older rental, so I have a primary heating of cadet wall heaters, and one of my primary heaters is mounted on an outside wall, and it gets cold here on the Oregon coast. So I am wondering how I could insulate that, hopefully on the exterior of the house, without removing the siding since this is a rental.
Oh, I got you. Okay. Well, you know, it's always a challenge when you're in a rental, but there are some really inexpensive things that you can do around the house that are not permanent. First of all, on a wall heater like that, is subject to not being sealed properly around the perimeter of that installation. So a little bit of caulking on the outside where it meets the siding or the brick or whatever the material is there, to really seal that up as tight as you can. Don't Don't forget the bottom part of it to ensure that that cold air is not seeping in around that. And then, of course, if you're not familiar with window insulating kits, they're fantastic. You can go to duckbrand.com and check them out. But they're basically just a thin piece of plastic that can go on the inside of your windows, very easy to install, and it provides a little insulation air barrier there that'll prevent that air leakage into the home. That's some very, very simple things that could probably make it a little easier to move that temperature up a little bit inside the house.
Yes, I just did that project yesterday.
Oh, good. All right. Well, you're making a good step in the right direction. And you know, caulking is cheap, and socket sealers. I don't know if you're familiar with that, where you may have an outlet or a switch on the inside of an outside wall, and you just take the plate off, put the little socket sealer on it, and put it back on. That also provides a little bit more of a tightening up the envelope effect on any of those areas like that. Joe, any other suggestions?
Yeah, Kathy, the only thing I was going to suggest is if you unscrew the face of this heater, so this is an electric heater that's mounted to the wall, right, inside your living room.
Yes.
So if you unscrew it, you should be able to remove either the face, it might just be a plate around this, or somehow unscrew it and remove it. And if you just hold your hand up there and you feel cold air coming in from around the housing that's in the wall, the heater itself, the mechanism itself, I would insulate around there either with caulking, or if the space is big enough, you can squirt in some great stuff, which is that expanding foam sealant.
Oh.
And if you use that, get the one that's rated as, I think it's called window and door, or minimally expanding foam, meaning it doesn't expand like 10 times the way the original one does, because you don't want to bend something in that, because it's probably just a metal housing. But anyway, you spray a little in there and it'll expand. If it comes out into the room, wait till it hardens and just slice it off with a knife. But that would keep air from blowing in from around this, because that would be my concern, is that no one ever put insulation near this, maybe for good reason, but the foam insulation you could add to it.
Okay, perfect.
All right. Well, I hope that makes you a little more comfortable during that cold Oregon winter. A beautiful place you live up there. I've traveled a lot up in there, have a lot of friends up in there, and boy, it's a very diverse part of the country.
It is. We'll come visit.
All right. That sounds good, Kathy. Well,
Thank you, gentlemen. Well,
okay, our pleasure. Welcome. Thanks so much for being a part of the show today.
You bet.
She's not the only one trying to tighten up the envelope and trying to make it a little more comfortable for everybody there. Let me get another quick email in here from Whitney in Jackson, Mississippi. We removed some old wall-to-wall carpeting from our bedroom, revealing nearly 60 foot of wooden tack strips around the perimeter of the room. The strips are nailed into the concrete slab every 4 feet or so. I tried prying up the strips, which breaks the strips into short pieces, but it doesn't lift out the nails. What's the trick to removing these strips? I'll tell you what, Whitney, that's a tough job. And sometimes those, particularly on concrete slabs, they'll use a contact cement to cement them down even more, because a lot of times the nails won't hold as well as they need to be. Just stay vigilant on it. A flat bar is a good thing to use. Make sure you use some eye protection here, because things, debris will fly around. But taking a flat bar, which is a real common tool, and just driving it carefully under those nails, and you might be going through some of the tack strip wood, and just pop those nails out of there. Now, a lot of times it'll leave a little divot there, and depending on what type of floor that you're putting down, you may have to patch, but it can be quite a challenge. You're listening to today's Homeowner Radio. Danny Lipford here, along with my buddy Joe Truini. When we come back, we're going to share with you a trick that we've used hundreds of times to take care of a little minor rot on that door frame, probably your back door or your front door. We'll tell you how to fix it for less than $10. All of that and a whole lot more right here on today's Homeowner Radio. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to today's Homeowner Radio. Here are Danny and Joe.
And welcome back to the Today's Homeowner Radio Show. Danny Lipford here, along with my buddy Joe Truini. We're having a lot of fun, just like we do each and every week, and hopefully helping out a lot of our listeners across the country with some of the challenges that they may have with any home ownership. It's going to happen. And one of the things that I have seen hundreds and hundreds of times is where you have a little bit of water damage, and you keep looking at it going, well, it's really not hurting anything. It's just kind of ugly. Right. But how do I repair it? And Joe, it's a very common thing, particularly exterior doors. And for some reason, maybe back doors or doors going, you know, maybe the doors that are more frequently used. And right at the very bottom, just to the side of the threshold, the many of the door jams that are real wood, you know, so many of them now are composite type materials, but it will wick up that water, a little bit of moisture there, a little bit of snow, a little bit of ice, and it ends up wicking up. And you end up with a little rotten spot there about as big as a, you know, 50-cent piece or whatever. So what do you do? Well, you can replace that whole side. You can buy pieces to replace that. But then you're getting into the trim, both inside and out. You're getting into the threshold. And the next thing you know, you have the whole entire door in your arms in several pieces, and you got to put it all back together just because of that. But instead of that, you heard us mention many, many times about Bondo. Now, we actually have the reason I'm bringing this up, we have a great email from Wes in Vestavia Hills, Alabama. It says, is there a solution to the small rotten spot I have at the bottom part of my door frame, or does the whole frame need to be replaced? Well, I can't say this is a permanent fix, but it certainly has worked for me for many, many years on certain door jams, where you basically remove the existing damaged wood. So you take a chisel, you dig out whatever you can to get back to some solid wood. Then, depending on the size of the hole that you have left there, sometimes it's good to take a piece of hardware cloth or even screen and a screw to kind of fill in that void just a little bit and make sure that it goes beyond the face of the frame so that it'll allow you to put patch over that. Now, the patch we like to recommend is an epoxy wood filler. Now, you'll find that at Home Depot. You'll find the branding on it often would be Bondo. Bondo, something very common in the automobile repair industry. But they also have a wood repair epoxy that works very, very quickly and very, very easily. That you mix it. You put just a little bit of the hardener on it. Don't make the mistake everybody makes.
That's
you
right.
Put too much hardener on it, or you won't even get it onto your plastic putty knife to put it on there. But when you mix it up real thoroughly, put it on. Smooth it out the best you can, and within about 5 minutes, it is hard as a rock. Then you can sand it and look to see if you need maybe some more to really smooth it out and make sure it looks good. You know, we talked about the light earlier. Great example where you get a really nice light right there on the work you're doing so that you can smooth it out and see it as well as you can. You know, I think a lot of times when people first use the Bondo, not only do they put the too much hardener in it, they also will tend to put too much on there, and then it's like putting drywall compound on.
Right.
You can pile it on there, and then you can spend the rest of your day sanding, so it's good to put just enough on there to smooth out the surface.
Yeah, the general rule is that if the rot is not all the way through the piece, right, if you start cutting it out with a chisel and you see that it's just like maybe halfway through the board, then you can patch it. If it goes all the way through, I would really at that point, I would just replace just the bottom section. Like I live in Connecticut, so we had snow piled up against the house and against the door. So, you know, you might want to go up a little higher if you live in an area that gets a lot of snow, but, you know, maybe go up 8, 10, 12 inches, make a nice square cut. You can use almost any saw, but I would probably recommend a multi-tool, an oscillating multi-tool. But anyway, you cut it out and replace it either with pressure-treated wood. But what I would recommend really is replace it with cellular PVC, which is basically plastic lumber. Mm-hmm. It'll never rot. It comes white. That's the only downside, I guess. If it's not white, you'll have to prime it and paint it. But it goes by the name AZEK, or Home Depot has a house brand called Veranda, which I've used, which works well. But anyway, if you replace it with cellular PVC, Danny, it'll never rot. It'll never blister, and you know, won't ever have to sand it again. So I guess if the rot goes all the way through, I would just replace that section.
And that's the thing on almost any piece of wood that you have on the outside of your house. There's probably an exact replacement for that in cellular PVC or other composite materials. You really don't want to turn around and put wood right back on there. I don't care if you prime it or do whatever you do. it's still subject to rot and decay. So you want to stay away from that. I will caution you, though, on the use of an epoxy wood filler is not for anything structural. So if you have a very common repair is around the bottom of wood columns, if you have any significant deterioration around there, it's better to replace the column because that might be a very important structural component to your home. You want to make sure that you don't rely on that.
Welcome back to Today's Homeowner Radio. Here are Danny and Joe.
Well, it's simple solution time right now, a time where I can kind of sit back, enjoy my cup of coffee, and let Joe earn his keep. Joe, what do you have today for us?
All right, Danny, here are five ways to use a speed square. If you're doing any kind of carpentry work and you don't have a speed square, you have to go out and get one. First, they're very affordable. And they come in a couple of different sizes, usually about 6 inches and 12 inches, I think, are the ones that I've seen most. And they're triangular in shape. And so they're perfect for marking square cross cuts, meaning 90 degrees cross cuts and 45 degree lines. It can also be used as a protractor, which is really useful. If you look closely in one corner of the speed square, it'll say pivot. And what you do is you rotate, that's the pivot point. So you just rotate it. And on the other edge of the square, you'll see markings, graduations of different degrees. So let's say you want a 30 degree line, you can just hold the pivot point in place, rotate it to the 30 degree mark, aligns with the edge of the board, and you can mark it, and that'll be exactly 30 degrees. And on one edge, every quarter inch in the square, there's a notch cut in it. And so what you can do is hold the square against the edge of the board and put the pencil point, your pencil point, in one of these notches and slide it along. And every quarter inch, you can mark, so you can mark a quarter inch from the board, an inch from the board, three-quarter inch or whatever. So a nice, perfectly parallel line. And what it's doing, it's eliminating the need to use your measuring tape. And they also have a little diamond cutout, you'll notice, in the body of the square. And that is exactly 3.5 inches from the edge of the square. So when you put your pencil in that diamond cutout and slide it along, that's the width of a 2x4. Hmm. And that comes in really handy whenever you have to lay a 2x4 on the edge of a deck or whatever, wherever you're putting on it, edge of a wall. So you just slide it along. And then, of course, probably the most useful application of a speed square is as a saw guide. You hold it in place and you run your saw against it either for a 45 degree cut or a 90 degree cut. Very quick, very safe way to do it. And if you go to todayshomeowner.com/simplesolutions, you can see a video of me demonstrating this technique.
Boy, whoever invented that tool, I would love to talk to them and see what their inspiration was. I can tell you this, it's someone that's done a lot of carpentry and a lot of framing. And when you see someone that's really using all of the benefits of a speed square, man, they'll whip that out of their apron and they're flipping that thing all around and marking and calculating this. It really is. It's an amazing tool to be so simple and so inexpensive. So great. A necessity for anybody that does a lot of work like that.
That's exactly right. They say necessity is the mother of invention, and this is it. Someone was working as a carpenter and said, there's got to be a better way. Either I had the combination square, which isn't big enough, long enough, or I have a framing square, which is too big and hard to carry around. And the fact that, you know, the one evidence that these speed squares are really popular, if you buy a tool belt, they have a slot for the speed square because people are carrying them around.
Well, our producer, Corey, just brought up that the founder of the speed square is Albert Swanson, because it's
Swanson
Speed
Tools.
Square.
That's
so
right.
I'm going to read up about him a little bit and find out. That's a pretty interesting little tidbit
there. We probably should mention that speed square is a trademark name of a manufacturer, but it's kind of like Kleenex or Band-Aid at this point.
Yeah.
You know, it's a generic term.
A lot of different ones out there. Hey, I want to remind you what you can see on the Today's Homeowner television show. You know, our television show is celebrating our 25th year. And we tackled a very interesting closet. It was what we call closet divided. We have a one room wall down the middle, and we've got his and her closets here. And of course, a husband and a wife have different needs when you're talking about a closet. So I help the husband on one side, and Chelsea helps the wife on the other side, and we all get along, and it turned out great. But what is a little unique is on his side, right, had a wall adjacent to the laundry room, and we were actually able to build a very unique laundry chute that when you open the door to use the laundry chute, right, you also had a pass-through shelving system that would allow when you wash the clothes, you just stack the linens right there. You didn't even have to leave the room. Hey, that's going to wrap up the first hour of today's Homeowner Radio. Certainly glad you were able to spend some of your busy weekend with us here.